Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and about what's next. It's a show that wants to ask questions, peel back the layers of our average everyday experience, and go beyond scratching the surface. We interview amazing people with incredible ideas and stories who have done wild, weird, and wonderful things. Remember that imagination shared creates collaboration, and collaboration creates community, and community inspires social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face. So my interview today is with Nathan Fitch. He's a documentarian out of New York who was recently at Hot Docs with his new film, Island Soldier. It's a film, it's a documentary about Micronesian citizens that are serving in the U.S. military. And by now, some of you are saying, where, pray tell, is Micronesia? All the more reason why you need to see the film, and you should listen to the interview coming up with Nathan. We talk a whole lot about, again, a whole lot of things. We talk about his film. We talk about why he was pulled into the project in the first place. But more importantly, we talk about the community of young men and women who are serving in the U.S. military, who are coming back to something that they, I think in a way we can say that they probably didn't expect. We talk about war, we talk about colonialism, and we talk about family and community and second-class citizens and what it means to share everything. We get into a little bit of geopolitics and geography and why Nathan fell in love with Micronesia. So I think you're going to enjoy the interview. You're going to enjoy the film. It's coming up. Nathan talks a little bit about that, but is also kind of secretive about where it's going to be showing next. But stay tuned. IslandSoldierMovie.com. And don't forget, DavidPeckLive.com for more information about my podcasting, writing, and speaking. And you can get behind face-to-face through Patreon.com. And don't forget, Rabble.ca as well for more information about my own podcasting and others as well. Coming right up, Nathan Fitch and Island Soldier. Well, welcome to Face to Face. We're joined by a very special guest today, another documentarian, a Hot Docs documentarian. Nathan Fitch is here with us to talk about his new film, Island Soldier. Nathan, thanks for your time today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Direct from New York, New York City.
Yep.
Very nice. So why don't we just jump right in? Tell me a little bit about the buzz of Hot Docs. Are you still coming down from that a little bit? What was the experience like?
Yeah, so Hot Docs was our international premiere and was pretty incredible. We had three screenings over the course of the festival, and they were all really good. After laboring on a film for a while, I have to say it was like really incredible to see it in a theater projected with really good sounds, like the TIFF light box, really kind of mind-blowing. Mm. After having watched it kind of like grow on monitors and, you know, various devices for years.
Right.
It was great. And it was, it was amazing to be kind of surrounded by the quality and breadth of films that were presented at this year's Hot Docs. So, you know, speaking for myself and my team, it was an honor. Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. So you must have had, you had three Q&As, we're about to dig into some questions here about the film and about sort of, I guess, the bigger picture and the metaphor of it all. But any questions stand out for you?
It was interesting. I think there's like certain questions that the film seems to like bring up in audiences.
Yeah.
And one thing, so Hot Docs was our international premiere, but we had our world premiere about 3 weeks earlier at a festival called Full Frame in North Carolina. And because there's a number of military bases around that festival, I had posted something on Facebook, and quite a number of Micronesians who were serving in the military sort of found out about the screening and were able to come to the Q&A, to the screening, and also take part in the Q&A. And I think that, you know, like one thing that I would have loved to sort of interject into the Hot Docs screenings would have been to have the voices of the people we're representing, also be able to kind of like speak to the film and the themes. And I think a lot of the questions that I was responding to at Hot Docs were kind of, you know, how did you come to the story? How did you get to Afghanistan? Things of that nature. And
yep.
I think that those questions are, I love to talk about that stuff, but I also, you know, in that screening context, really enjoyed having the people who are being represented and whose kind of life, you know, part of their life narrative is represented in some way through the film.
And isn't that kind of why you make a film like this in the first place?
Right. And I mean, I think like Micronesia is a place that not a lot of people know about, right? It's been referenced a few times, like Zoolanders, you know, right. The sort of blockbuster film, like referenced it. And, you know, like for another generation, for my grandparents, both of my grandparents served in the military. Both of them, you know, were enlisted or were, you know, we're serving during World War II, and for them, Micronesia was a very important place. Like, my father's father was, you know, sailed through Micronesia on his way to Japan and was, like, wounded in the heart with a piece of shrapnel, like, in Okinawa. And for him, those islands had, like, a resonance and an importance. But I think now it's, like, a place that's easy to not know about. So I think, you know, There's also a colonial history and you know, ideas of representation. It feels like a very important topic in documentary. I think I'm happy to speak to my sort of experience of making the film, but have also been very happy with the reception of the film by the people we're representing.
It's so interesting. I mean, one of the things that stood out to me was the idyllic settings. I mean, the establishing shots, you've got moments throughout the film that are, I mean, it's stunning photography. It's and by the way, congratulations on the
Thank
film
you.
and Hot Docs and all of that. It's really quite a remarkable thing, and I have a huge amount of respect for the effort, the time, the passion, the commitment, and all of that. This unbelievably beautiful place, and yet, you know, it's like, I guess, anywhere in the world, when you start to peel back a layer or two, stories emerge. And this is, you know, an easy, like you say, this is an easy place to not know about. You know, who the heck has heard about Micronesia? So
right. But to kind of speak to that, so the way I did come to the narrative was after I finished undergrad, I had been studying at a art school in California and had been working incredibly hard. And it, to some degree, burned out, and to some degree decided I didn't want to work in the kind of industry in L.A. that felt like it was going to be where I could go.
Right.
So I applied and was accepted into the Peace Corps, and after a few kind of false starts where I was offered a position somewhere and then accepted and then it was gone, got Micronesia as kind of my assignment.
Okay.
And so I have kind of a vivid memory sitting in a coffee shop kind of flipping through this manual that the Peace Corps sent me and kind of being like, you know, really know nothing about this, you know, part of the world. And to be totally honest, at that point, was not terrifically interested in the Pacific as a region.
Right.
Kind of had some sort of stereotypes of like South Pacific musical films and like grass skirts and like sort of didn't at that point understand how complex and interesting and kind of amazing
right.
The culture and the people were, but deciding to kind of go. And the thing that kind of hooked me right away was kind of the natural beauty of these islands. I mean, you kind of step off the plane and you're kind of hit with this like incredibly warm air that's full of all, you know, the scents of like flowering trees. And it's just a really a different world. And I think, you know, it was interesting, out of the four people that year that were assigned to the islands that I spent my sort of Peace Corps experience, my Peace Corps service on, I was the only one who stayed for the full 2 years. Everyone
right?
else left for various reasons. And I think, you know, the beauty was the thing that hooked me, and then sort of getting into the community was the thing that kept me for the full.
So the film's about Micronesia. It's about the military. It's about a whole lot of things. Can you give us a little bit of context before we go a little deeper?
Sure. Like, do you want the sort of log line of the film?
Yeah. The film and a little bit of, And maybe some of the implications for you even, and some of the changes that maybe you kind of went through as a result of, you know, the filming.
Sure. Been kind of a long day. So Island Soldier explores the service of Micronesian citizens in the U.S. military at very high rates per capita. So non-Americans who have been enlisting in America's Army, Navy, different branches of the military, especially since post 9/11, Micronesians were serving before that, but post 9/11, with the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan heating up, basically Micronesia became a recruiter's paradise. Because with the end of the draft, you know, people like myself with a certain amount of privilege were less eager to enlist. And certainly in the family I grew up in, military service was not the first choice. So Island Soldier explores the journey, like what it's like to leave one of the like most remote, peaceful islands in the world, to go from there into the military, into the U.S. military, and then to war and back again, and kind of the implications or the impact of America's wars on these countries who have been sacrificing their young people at very high rates per capita. They've actually been dying at a rate that's five times higher than Americans. So that statistic alone is a little staggering for most Americans who sort of would have no clue that this is like even a place to know that they've
right.
been dying, shedding their blood for us, I think. And I think, you know, to go to, you know, I lived in the island, you know, for a few years and sort of watched my friends leave and join the military and come back and, you know, I saw the change in them, and without making any kind of judgment about if it was good or bad, I think
right.
at the time it was just a profound change. so that was like, in some ways, the seed of the film, and also feeling the conflicted nature within the community around this, you know, around this topic. Like, should our young people be going off to fight for America? Like, are these values in line with our cultural kind of priorities? But somewhere along the line, I kind of realized that I had come to this place that not a lot of people knew. And I was serving, I was there as a Peace Corps volunteer, but they were serving in my place because I didn't want to go, you know, for whatever reason
sure.
to Iraq and Afghanistan. But I'm there to help their community, but really they're kind of slotted in my place because Americans like me don't want to go fight. So
right.
I think, you know, in terms of thinking about the impetus, and at some point the responsibility for making this film. I felt like Americans, at least, you know, should have some idea of where
of course,
these people
yeah.
are coming from, and also kind of, you know, some of the challenges they face when they come back. And
Nathan, yeah. is this would you describe Island Soldier as an anti-war film?
You know, I wouldn't describe it as an anti-war film, and I think one thing that has been important to me in terms of making the film has been that it's told in Micronesian voices and that I don't project too much of my own politics and my own like political stance onto the people I'm representing.
Right.
Because I think, like I said, you know, they don't have their voice heard. They don't get to be in cinema. They don't get to be on the screen very often, you know?
Right.
It's like, look, this is like, you know, whether this film, if this film had not gotten into any festivals and had only, you know, been seen back in the islands, I still think there's an importance for this community to feel represented in the world, and to be on YouTube or wherever the film would have lived. So is it anti-war? I mean, I think there's a prominent voice. I think there's prominent voices in the film that are anti-war, and there's also young people who, you know, feel patriotism to the U.S. or to the idea of the U.S. and want to serve and want to, you know, contribute. And I think that to me as a filmmaker, it felt like if I had too much of an agenda, it might not be true to their experience. So I don't know if that answers, but that
yeah,
was kind of,
no, I, you know, I don't, I'm not sure it is. It's an, I mean, my, from my perspective, I'm not sure it's an anti-war film either, but I couldn't help but thinking about
right.
how the perspective changed from, you know, one of the characters in the film. I can't remember if it's Mario Saps' best friend. And he's, you know, he says, I want to be an American soldier, you know,
yep.
and is this
yep.
is about fighting for freedom and just all that sort of, you know, and as a Canadian, I don't quite understand that, you know, that militaristic edge quite as much. My father served in the Royal Air Force, but, you know, in Canada, we just don't seem to have that ethos in the same way that Americans seem to. And so, and here's these, you know, these Micronesian folks and families that are clearly military families raised with it, right? And looking forward to it in a sense. And you kind of go, wow, is that really what the U.S. is exporting around the world?
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, I think it's a complicated question. And I think in Micronesia, we're talking about, you know, very small islands. And throughout their colonial history, the people who have come in have come in with warships, right? you know, the Spanish, the Germans, the Japanese, the Americans. And, you know, different colonial rulers have kind of like ruled in different ways. Like
right.
The Germans, when they were in Micronesia, were kind of like more hands off and let the islanders kind of do their thing a little more. But in general, I think it's safe to say that the Micronesians have always been second class citizens post kind of European colonialism, right?
Right.
Like the people came in and they had the guns and kind of like had the power. And I think that that's like, in terms of understanding the allure of sort of donning the military uniform, is a hard thing to discount. And even though it's been a long time since that happened, I think things are passed through the generations and kind of like ideas about how you look at these people. And I think one thing that kind of illustrates why for a Micronesian joining the military might have allure, was that, as far as I've been able to sort of find in my research, the first time that Micronesians were enlisted to fight in a foreign military was during World War II.
Right.
And a group of young men was enlisted from an island called Pohnpei, which is about 300 miles from the island that my film, Koshrai, is sort of set on. And these young men were kind of vetted and then were allowed to become, you know, soldiers for the Japanese army. And until then, they had kind of been the second-class citizens who, like, you know, are serving their the controlling sort of Japanese force. And at that moment, they put on the uniform, and they were allowed to have sake for the first time. They were allowed to kind of have a gun and sort of be equals with these people who until then had been their rulers, you know. So I think if you think about it, if you can enlist and suddenly have this power, you know, transferred to you that you are no longer less than the people who have colonized you. And obviously now Micronesia is an independent country, and but I think the colonial history and the kind of reverence for America and for Americans for liberating them from Japan, even though it's not as clearly evident in the younger generation, is definitely still felt by the people who experienced, you know.
Sure. Yeah.
Liberation. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's interesting. You kind of touched on it. I can't help but think too. There's a sense in which some of these young guys and women who enlist, who are heading, you know, are stepping into a community. I mean, we're talking a community that not only is attractive because of, you know, the promo video they got to see, you know, that draws them in when they enlist and so on, but that. Wow, this is a group of people that I'm going to be accepted by. There's going to be camaraderie here. There's community here. There's a team spirit, and I got that sense. I mean, Kosrae is a community of about 6,500 people. Is that right?
It's correct.
We're talking about a very small population, so I would imagine pretty limited opportunities.
No, absolutely. I mean, look, I think you're spot on with that, and I think Micronesian culture is much less individualistic. It's much more about community and kind of the sort of good of the group versus your own personal ambitions to some degree. And I think in that way, the islanders from Kosrae have, you know, in some ways the military makes sense for them ideologically. Like they kind of get in and they're part of this like group and they're all working towards the same, you know, end. And I think, you know, although there's sort of a limited number of people in the film, I did a lot of interviews, and I think that was one thing that I would say sort of resonated with subjects, the sort of idea of their service being for the good of the sort of group, you know? And I think that they related to that idea. I think that it's actually a really hard transition to go from a very low, quiet place into sort of military rigor.
Oh, I would. I would think it would be incredibly difficult.
Incredibly different. You know, when I first sort of moved there, I'd be invited to a party, and I would show up. The party would be at 12, and I would show up at, you know, 12, and no one else would come for about 2 hours, and then people start trickling in with food, and I think, you know, for me also that was like an interesting idea, having lived in the islands and really experienced how slow and tranquil and, you know, what that would be like in a visceral sense, you know. And I would have loved to film more of that transition, but it's been difficult for any number of reasons. But I think, you know, I think it's not an easy transition for that reason. It's not an easy transition because some of the young people either don't speak English so well when they're enlisted or are very shy. And, you know, there's varying kind of narratives about, like, how people are treated.
Right.
How the Micronesians are treated and how race and, you know, class things transition in the, you know, are sort of, like, built into the military culture. So I think, you know, like someone like Staps, the character who passes away and whose best friend kind of journeys to the island to kind of meet his family and come to peace with his own PTSD and devils. His father was in the Navy, and so he grew up sort of as a military brat.
Mm-hmm.
But he actually almost got expelled from the military because one of his friends who was being harassed for racial reasons, he lashed out and, you know, fought with two or three white soldiers and almost got expelled until someone kind of looked into the details. So I think, you know, it's not a part of the movie per se, but I think that there is, as especially someone coming from a country and a place no one knows about, there's like a certain, lack of regard for who you are and like where you're coming from that might be less prevalent for me as like a white man going into the military.
To what degree do you think this is about, you know, and this is, you know, never necessarily simple, but I think, you know, in the film it comes out, the average income in Micronesia is about $2,000 a year U.S., but someone in the military can make probably upwards, probably even higher than this, but I think the average was around $18,000. I mean, that's nine times the average salary. That's pretty significant. That's huge, right? So that's got to be a pretty significant draw. I couldn't help but think this was, you know, kind of a little bit about the American dream as well. You know, wow, this is an opportunity for me to step outside, to see the world, and to come back with, you know, quite a bit of cash.
No, absolutely. I mean, I think you're spot on with that, and I think, you know, that is definitely a lot of the young people. And the idea, you know, this was a few years ago, but when I was living in Costa Rica, the governor, a high-paid official on the island, was making around $18,000 a year. So as an 18-year-old with no college education, you can kind of, like, be vaulted into the realm of one of the highest-paid government officials.
Yeah.
But I think it's also kind of important to think about the cultural context of money in Micronesia. The film is focused on Costa Rica, and that's kind of where I spent the bulk of my time and know kind of the most about. But kind of the idea there is that out of every family of, you know, seven or eight people, one person has a job and then supports everyone else. And so I think what you see happening when these young people decide to enlist is not only, you know, the idea of a fat paycheck for yourself, but it's the idea of a paycheck that can be dispersed throughout your, you know, family and extended family, and sort of, you know, a lot of these, the vast majority of these soldiers, these Micronesian soldiers, are sending home money in a way that I think as an American soldier, you probably, if you're making $18,000, $20,000 a year, that money is probably not supporting a family of eight, you know, 10.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, you're back to your comment earlier about, you know, Micronesian culture and community and relationship and so on. And it's definitely a different way of life. I mean, I know I spent a fair bit of time in Cambodia, and a few years ago on a trip, I remember getting into a conversation with somebody about what we do to our parents here in the West. You know, what do you mean you put them in an old folks home? You know, that's absurd. That's not the way you treat your elders. That's not the right. And yet that's kind of what's accepted. I mean, so there's just this different understanding of community. And I think anyway, and yet, you know, on some level we're all pretty much the same. It seems to me. Hey, to what degree is Island Soldier about, Nathan, about human rights? I mean, or is it about Micronesian human rights? Or couldn't you say there's more of a global sort of picture there?
Before we jump onto that, can I say one more thing about Micronesia?
Of course, yeah.
I just feel like we're going to move on from the subject of why the sort of the motives in that experience. And I think one last thing I think is important to sort of understand in terms of their experience is that in a place with nothing, like, family is everything. Like, I would guess, you know, in Cambodia, you know, families are tight-knit. Maybe like Micronesia, they're kind of living in close quarters, kind of sharing everything. And I think that closeness is also what makes it so hard to have, you know, family members go places that are, you know, geographically, you know, far-flung, but also, you know, a flight to Micronesia can be $3,000, $4,000, you know, depending on when you get it. So it can kind of be too expensive to sort of regularly reconnect with family. And I think
so out of reach for most Micronesians, right?
And so out of reach.
Yeah, so out of reach. And then also the other thing that really struck me that so beautifully comes out in your film is just the tight knit family. That excruciating scene of the father leaving, and for me it was excruciating anyway. I have a young daughter and a young son, 9 and 11, and thinking, wow, how do folks do it? How do people, you know, how do you justify that? How do you come to terms with that? You know, that whatever it is, that 9-month tour, you know, it's wow, it's just the choices we make, you know.
Yeah, and I mean, to go to your question about human rights. I mean, I think there's, you know, I was, before I started making the film, I was at the house of a Micronesian friend, and his son had been in the military and had died while in service. He was not killed in action, but sort of died through, you know, events that happened in the military. And his father had erected kind of this shrine for him back in the islands, really kind of nice little house with like all these flowers, kind of a cultural thing you do in Micronesia for someone who's passed.
Right.
Building sort of a house is not unusual, but this VA officer had been traveling through Micronesia, and he came to dinner, and we were talking, and, you know, he was like, look, these guys are not getting what they're entitled to. They're just not sort of, because this is not America, they're too far away. They're not kind of getting their due benefits.
Right.
And that was a really interesting moment to me, because that was like coming from someone, I mean, granted he was working for the VA and he was like looking into this stuff, but to have that wasn't a question I asked. He kind of volunteered this sort of before I had been really thinking about that as a, you know, as a theme for the film. And I think that hopefully that resonates. And I think in a simple way, you know, I think there's things about the film, about enlistment, about service. And I think, you know, it's hard to be super black and white. You know, at some point when I was living in the islands, I realized I probably would have enlisted too. I probably would have wanted that paycheck, would have wanted to like support my family.
Yep.
And I really wanted the film not to be not to sort of misrepresent kind of that experience of these people and their motives. But I think that the thing that to me is pretty black and white is the fact that these people, you know, some of these people I've interviewed have done 5, 6, you know, a lot of deployments over the, you know, in Iraq and Afghanistan and Somalia and, you know, any number of kind of dangerous places.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the fact that they kind of come home, they're recruited from their islands and they come home and they don't have access to the healthcare benefits, to loans, to, you know, various benefits that's kind of what you're earning with your blood, right?
Right.
As an American, you're like,
sure,
you know, you're not going to get paid that much, but you're going to get these kind of advantages down the line, which can hopefully help you kind of build your life after your military service. And I think that's to me a clear kind of human rights issue in the film, is that if the U.S. was going to recruit these people, especially most of them have been serving in really dangerous, a lot of them are infantry, a lot of dangerous situations, there needs to be some thought put into like what happens afterwards, you know? Like,
so it's
how
so,
do they
so in a but, so in a way it's I was going to say it's a wake up call. It's not really a wake up call for the military or for the government, the U.S. government, but it's a film about, you know, clearly an issue that needs to be attended to, and probably not just in Micronesia, or is this kind of a one off?
No, I mean, I don't know if a wake up call is the right thing to call it, but, you know, the film, not to spoil the film, or make you not make people not want to watch it, but it opens with a funeral, right?
Yeah, right. Yes.
I guess we can leave that.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
But at the funeral, I was talking, this general had kind of come in for the funeral, which was actually a pretty great show of respect. And it was, you know, the people, the mother, the soldier was really kind of, you know, floored. And I think her appreciation kind of gets at a certain modesty in the people, too, which I think hopefully comes across in the film, mm-hmm. that these people are not, they're not activists. They're not demanding things from people. They're kind of, that's not their culture. It's not their vibe. But I was talking to this general who had come in to kind of give a speech, and he was like floored by the number of veterans who were coming out for this funeral. And obviously, like most of the population of the island came out for this guy because they all either knew him, were related to him, or in general were just like, you know, this is like a thing for our island, like one of our,
right,
our sons.
This is what we do.
This is what we do, but also we should show respect, you know. This is, it's a culture also around kind of veneration and kind of showing respect to people who contribute to community, because that's kind of the most important thing there. So this guy's funeral was a big thing. But this general, you know, at the funeral we were chatting, and he was saying, I really want to look into this when I get back, because I had no idea that the people from these islands were serving at these rates. And so I think, you know, I don't know that many people within the U.S. military would actually know, you know. I think the recruiters who go there have a good idea, and there are a number of people. And I think that a lot of veterans and people in the military have served alongside Pacific Islanders, and, you know, whether they're from Micronesia or Samoa or Tonga or, you know, Hawaii, would kind of like have, I would hope the film would sort of resonate with them, because I think the characteristics that made someone like Sapporo, one of the characters, a good soldier, those are characteristics that kind of are culturally built into these people. But yeah, I mean, the geopolitics are also a part of the film, and the fact that the relationship with the U.S. and the funding from the U.S. are kind of up in the air right now.
Sure.
And so the Federated States of Micronesia is a country that depends almost entirely on U.S. aid, which is kind of given in exchange for military control of this vast, you know, million square mile swath of the Pacific, which is important for U.S. strategic interests. But that agreement is slated to end not too long from now. And so I think, you know, another point of the film would be, what do we owe these people and this country? And I think kind of a way of thinking about it from the Micronesian perspective that I came to, was reading about, there's other islands in Micronesia called Yap that have the largest money in the world. There's these huge, like, limestone rings that are quarried from other islands. And anyway, it's a really interesting thing, but a tangent. But that's one major island, and then there's a bunch of smaller islands.
Right.
And each year, the people in the smaller islands put together this tribute, send into the main island. So when their smaller island gets hit by a typhoon, when their crops get wiped out and they're kind of like destitute, they can like sail into the main island and be welcomed and have the people there, you know, say, stay as long as you need. And then, you know, when you're ready, go back and start life on your island. And I think, you know, to me, Micronesians sending their young people into the U.S. military is an offering. It's like what they have to give to this like larger country.
Right.
And these are like the valedictorian kind of, these are not, you know, military service in Micronesia is different than it is in the U.S. I feel, you know, pretty clear to say that. So yeah, I mean, I think, like, what the relationship is going forward, and what the U.S. kind of owes to these islands is a question. And I think there's this is also not really a part of the film, but there is also a certain stereotype in places where Micronesians have been migrating to, like Hawaii and Guam have been the two kind of bigger places where Micronesians are kind of like these people who come with their hands out and look for handouts and aren't sort of giving to the community they're moving into. And it's a complicated thing. And that, you know, there are people moving and not sort of having, you know, jobs lined up, and there are problems. But I think, I hope the Island Soldier also presents a counter narrative of the way these immigrants, because it's an extension of how immigrants are looked at anywhere, right? It's like the new.
Oh, absolutely. Well, that's what I'm always looking for in films like this is, yeah, sure, it's about a specific. I mean, the film is about so much more than what the film is about, if that makes any sense, right? And we're going to have to wrap it up here in a second, unfortunately. But I think, you know, you really speak to that in the way that you know, sort of the epilogue almost, the wrap up, there are other opportunities. There are other things going on. There's a sustainable farming business happening. There's a hip hop clothing business being opened. You know, I really love that. You know, what was the line? The future of development in this country will depend on, right? And there's just, it's about
our young people coming back.
Yes, it's about what's next, right? It's about opportunity. It's about the future, and I think that's yeah. It's a beautiful film, Nathan. I hope everybody gets to see it, but I hope the right people get to see it, and I hope you can continue to create the conversation around this. You know, you say it's a question, but I think the film raises a lot of really not only interesting questions, but really important questions about human rights, about PTSD, about mental health issues, about trauma, and all of that, and about community, you know. And again, it's a great film, and it's just you've covered a lot of ground. So thanks for that. What's next for you guys?
Thank you so much for having me on and talking about the film. I'm actually not at liberty to kind of talk about our next festival, because we're like negotiating.
Oh, good for you.
We have some other festivals, and you know, in a personal sense, and for me and my collaborators on the film, I would, you know, acknowledge this film has been a collaboration.
Sure.
I would say we're extremely excited to kind of take it to the Pacific and have those screenings, and you know, it's incredible to screen it in the U.S. and in Canada, Hot Dogs. And I think it'll be really great to also bring it back to the people we're kind of representing. And, you know, hopefully the film can really open up a dialogue there around some of the issues that the film addresses.
Well, thanks for your time today. We're talking to Nathan Fitch about his new film, Island Soldier. Check it out online at islandsoldiermovie.com. Nathan, thanks for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. This was incredible.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.